Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. Nice to see you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Nice to see you too.
Since you are a lawyer, a defense lawyer, I'd like to get your opinion on this. What do you think of the optics of Stephen Harper engaging Rob and Doug Ford as part of his campaign?
Well, I guess the amusing part of it is watching a party whose one of their platforms is this tough on crime, anti-drug platform, going to have a political rally with somebody who's a at least recent ex-smoker. So the irony is thick.
Okay, right. We're going to move on now to deal with the role of the Governor General in the event that no party wins a majority in the election. Before we get into that, CFAX listeners, please join our conversation as we roll here. 250-386-1161, star 1070 on your cell phone. You can email us, talk at cfax1070.com. You can also find us on Facebook. This is a really curious situation. So walk us through it. What would happen?
I think it's going to be, if the polls are to be believed, I think it's exceedingly likely we're going to wind up with the minority government of one form or other. And that raises some interesting issues about how that works. And in Canada, we don't directly elect the government or directly choose who the prime minister is going to be. The way that works is also doesn't seem to be clearly understood by any of the current candidates for the job. Earlier on during the campaign, Mr. Harper was quoted as saying in an interview, you have to have the most seats in Parliament to go to the Governor General to form government. And Mr. Mulcair said the party with the most seats has the, quote, automatic right to govern, close quote. Mr. Trudeau seemed to buy into this notion as well, saying whoever commands the most seats gets the first shot at governing. None of that is quite right. The way it works on the election day, whatever happens on the election, first of all, Mr. Harper remains the prime minister. Even if his party is decimated, he would remain the prime minister until either he resigns or he is dismissed by the governor general. So, for example, when Kim Campbell wound up with two seats following the election, I think that was in 93, she remained the prime minister until she chose to resign. There's a judgment call, an important judgment call for a governor general, where you have a circumstance where no party has a majority of the MPs in the House of Commons. Now, the tradition, as I mentioned, not the tradition, but the current prime minister remains the prime minister. And the tradition is that that person, if they wish, would have the right to go and face the House. And in Canada, we have what's called responsible government. The government needs to maintain the confidence of the majority of the MPs in the House of Commons. So if following the election, Mr. Harper doesn't have a majority, he could choose to go to the House of Commons, there would be a confidence vote, and that would determine whether he has the confidence of the House or not. And the question is not who has the most seats, which party. The ultimate question would be, can somebody command a majority of support in the House of Commons? Yeah, there's recent precedent.
That's crucial right there, right?
Yeah, there's a recent example of where a party that gets the most seats doesn't get to form government. That happened in 1985 in Ontario. What happened is the Conservative Party there won the most seats. They had more than the Liberal Party and more than the NDP. The NDP was unwilling to support the Conservative Party. They agreed to support the Liberal Party, and the Liberal Party then got to form government. So the candidates for the job are incorrect when they say that the party with the most seats has the automatic right to form government. That's simply not how it works. The other interesting matter of discretion for the Governor General, in addition to the issue of if there's a vote of non-confidence, the Governor General then has the task of deciding Are they going to allow another leader an opportunity to try and go get try and go to the House of Commons to get support? Or are they going to call an election? So, yes, that's
so,
right.
So, okay, so give us a mock scenario here on the election night.
Well, let's imagine that Mr. Harper winds up with the most seats, or the Conservative Party does, but not enough to form a majority. He would have the he would remain the Prime Minister, and he would be required to face the House. So there would be a vote in the House of Commons amongst the MPs, and if he didn't have a majority, and if the Liberals and the NDP do what they indicate they would do, he would lose the non-confidence vote, and that would be the end, by matter of convention, that would be the end for him. He would be expected to resign. The Governor General then, David Johnston, would need to decide whether he is going to call an election, dissolve the House and have another election to try again, or he would have the choice to ask one or any of the other possible leaders whether they wish to try forming government and to get support in the House.
And what would the Governor General base that decision on as to who he would ask?
Well, that's the discretion, and it's an important element of discretion. We have in Canada, there's an affair from 1920s. It's called the King Byng Affair. And in that case, the Prime Minister went to the Governor General. It was a minority circumstance, and asked the Governor General to dissolve the House and have an election. The Governor General at the time refused and said he wasn't going to do that, and instead asked the Conservative leader to form government, and that's what occurred. So there are circumstances where the Governor General may not accept the advice from the Prime Minister in terms of whether to call an election or how to proceed. But the critical points are the Governor General makes that decision. The issue is not simply who has the most seats. They don't have an automatic right to govern, as the Prime Minister suggested. And in our system of government, the government needs to maintain the confidence of the House. That's why we call it responsible government. They're responsible to the House of Commons. And it's the MPs that ultimately will vote to determine whether the government maintains confidence of the House.
Just sounds like it could be a real schmozzle.
Well, it may be. I think we're fortunate in terms of who we've got as a Governor General at the moment. David Johnston, who's the Governor General, and he's been the Governor General since October of 2010. He's a former law school professor. He was the dean of a law school. So we've got somebody in that job with, I expect, an excellent understanding of what his task is. And in Canada, many of these things, and the reason why you've got a circumstance where a sitting prime minister and the other candidates for the job don't seem to have a crystal clear understanding of how it works, is that much of Canadian constitutional law is not written. It's a matter of convention. So the rules that the Governor General should apply in deciding how he's going to proceed and who he takes advice from and so forth, much of that is by constitutional convention. You can't just look up in the Constitution. You can't look at a piece of legislation and say, well, how does this work and how is the Governor General to pick somebody? It's a matter of looking at precedent and genuinely a matter of discretion.
So that's where King Byng comes in.
That's right.
And Ron Cheffins, my regular guest on Politics 1070, did reference this the other day. He's going to be back on with me on an expanded version with Ron Cheffins tomorrow. So you want to tune in at 10:45 to catch him for 45 minutes. To the phones and John. Hi, John. You're on CFAX 1070.
Oh, good morning, Pamela, and to your guests. That was interesting about Sir Mulligan talking of how terrible it was, the Ford boys being around at Harper's meeting. But you know what? You'd be surprised how many murderers and horrible thugs in jail who are going to be voting for either the Liberals or the Democrats, too, the New Democrats. So, you know, purification is always around the corner.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know if we're going to go anywhere on that. Go ahead,
well,
Michael.
No, sure. I don't think that it's necessarily terrible that he's going to an event with the Ford brothers. It's simply ironic, given that, given the position of Mr. Harper in terms of drugs and so forth, that he'd be having a rally with those people. The Conservative government or Conservative Party is apparently running ads talking about how the Liberal Party would provide drugs to children in a perhaps a, an unfair fashion. And at the same time, you've got Mr. Harper going to a rally put on by somebody who's an acknowledged recent crack user.
Mm, interesting stuff. You're listening to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson. We're going to take a break and we'll be back right after this.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. Rain, sun, snow. We get it right with an accurate forecast. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
A Japanese, a German, and an American auto executive get into a car. An all-new 2016 Hyundai Elantra with standard rear-view camera, sunroof, fog lights, and more. They're stumped.
Nani? How does Hyundai do it?
Heck! How does Hyundai do it?
How does Hyundai do it?
Get into the new Elantra SE with GL features plus sport appearance package. A combined total of $5,000 in value savings. The competition just can't figure out how we do it. That's the H-Factor. The Hyundai Advantage ends November 2nd. Dealer may sell for less. Visit HyundaiCanada.com for details.
Island Marble has been performing total bathroom renos from conception to completion since 1967. And now, they're making it easier than ever. From October 16th to 18th, Island Marble will be at the 2015 Fall Home Expo at Perks Recreation Center. They'll be showcasing three of their new groutless tile systems that give the look of tile or stone without the maintenance or sanitary issues associated with grout. Island Marble at the Fall Home Expo at Perks Recreation Center. Endless possibilities.
Federal Election Day is October 19th. Make sure you know where to go and what to bring to be ready to vote. Check the voter information card and flyer that arrived in the mail. You can also call 1-800-463-6868 or visit elections.ca. Elections Canada has all the information you need to be ready to vote.
Blue Rodeo in concert. January 28th, Save on Foods Memorial Center. With special guest, Tara Lightfoot. Blue Rodeo, celebrating the release of their new album, live at Massey Hall. Available Friday, October 16th. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. at LiveNation.com and the Save on Foods Memorial Center box office. Every ticket purchase for Blue Rodeo includes a digital download of any album in the Blue Rodeo catalog.
Thank you.
With Smart Voice from Shaw Business, you can manage all your communications from any device with a single number wherever you go. At your office, at the job site on your tablet, collaborate over screen sharing, even video conference from the park. Because when opportunity calls, you should answer.
Grow your business with Shaw Smart Voice. Use any device with a single number wherever you go. Conditions apply. Visit shawbusiness.ca for details.
It's here. A new beginning for Volvo. A new idea of what luxury can be. The 2016 Volvo XC60, ready with all-wheel drive, is the perfect car for drivers in search of adventure around town and beyond it. Test drive the 2016 XC60 at the new and improved Jim Pattison Volvo of Victoria on Douglas at Hillside, or visit them online at jpvolvoofvictoria.com. And make sure to like them on Facebook for your chance at exclusive monthly contests and giveaways.
CFAX Sunday, the biggest stories of the week, revisited with all your favorite hosts. Sunday morning at 8 on CFAX 1070. The biggest news events, the stories in our community. Understood. It's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Today, we're dealing with the role of the Governor General in the event that no party wins a majority in Monday's election. You just said off, Mike, this stuff is dense.
It is a little dense, and that may help explain why none of the current people looking for the job seem to quite understand how it is that they might get the job of becoming prime minister. There is simply an exercise of discretion. The prime minister can be dismissed by the governor general. They can the person who can be asked to become the prime minister and try to go get support in the House. That person is selected by the governor general. That's one of the important constitutional functions of the person who does that job. There are traditions and precedent which would guide the governor general in determining how he's going to exercise that power. But the important thing to remember is we're not directly electing the government. Come election day, Mr. Harper remains the prime minister until either he resigns or he's dismissed by the governor general. In that King Byng affair that I mentioned earlier, Mr. King, who was the Liberal prime minister following the election back in 1926, I think it was, his party, the Liberal Party, actually got fewer seats than the Conservative Party did. But he chose not to resign. He said, look, I've got the support of the progressives, and with them I'd have a majority, and I'm remaining in office. So he just chose to stay.
But Harper, or at least Trudeau and Mulcair, have said that they will not support Harper.
I mean, that's the practical reality here, right? As you've got, I think Mulcair said Snowball's chance in hell that he would support Mr. Harper, and Mr. Trudeau has been equally clear. So the practical outcome is that if the Conservative Party gets less than a majority, both the NDP and the Liberal Party leaders have said they will not support him in the House. And if they maintain that position, likely what would occur if Mr. Harper decided to stay in office and not resign if he didn't win a majority, he would be required to have a vote of confidence in the House of Commons. And if those other leaders do what they say they're going to do and their MPs follow those directions, he would lose the vote and be out.
Let's see what Ken has to say. Hi, Ken. Thanks for calling CFAX.
Yes. Frank Stanford was on this subject earlier today, and part of the information that came out was as Geoff pointed out, that in Australia and New Zealand, they have very extensive written rules to guide the Governor General or whatever to, you know, what action to take under given situation. Whereas in Canada, nothing apparently is written.
Yeah.
Now, your guest is saying that a lot of this is up to the discretion of the Governor General, which is, considering that most Canadians think of him as a figurehead, it suddenly seems that there are moments when he becomes a great deal more. And what does concern me in this instance particularly is that of the three party leaders, the relationship between one another is obviously, from all their public statements and what we've seen on television, extraordinarily bad. In other words, there's no real desire for cooperation.
Right.
And does that not come into this if this is going to work? Otherwise, within a few months, we'd be back and having an election.
You make some excellent points. Let's put these to Michael Mulliken.
Yes, first of all, in terms of sort of the written rules, if you actually read the various documents that make up the Canadian Constitution, you would conclude that the Governor General has immense power on a day-to-day basis. They've got the power, for example, with each piece of legislation to simply disallow it and simply say, I'm not signing that, and it won't become law. It's simply by matter of tradition that some of those formal powers aren't exercised or haven't been exercised for some time. Some of those powers, the power to disallow or reserve on legislation, were actually used at the provincial level by the lieutenant governors up to as late as the early 1960s. They were examples of legislation which was passed by the government and the lieutenant governor simply said no, or reserved on it for the governor general to go and consider it.
So to Ken's point, the governor general's could hold the cards, ultimately.
That's true. They do. And if you look at the formal rules, you would conclude they've got this immense discretion. Each piece of legislation, if Mr. Johnston chooses not to sign it, doesn't become law. That's what you would conclude if you read the written rules. It's simply by a matter of constitutional tradition that's not how the government actually functions. In normal circumstances, the Governor General is going to be cutting ribbons, handing out medals, and signing whatever piece of legislation is put before him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in these circumstances where the job becomes critically important, and it's very important to have somebody there who has a good understanding of what their role is, right? Because they're the ones who are going to determine who the Prime Minister is going to be, at least to the point of being able to go and face the House for a vote to determine whether they can stay in that position. So Mr. Johnson's going to, in all probability, if the polls are to be believed, going to have some important decisions to make. And to the caller's point about, you know, these people getting along, that may be a consideration. If Mr. Harper didn't win a majority, but decided to face the House and lost a vote of non-confidence, it would then be over to the Governor General to decide whether he's going to call a new election or whether he would permit Mr. Trudeau or Mr. Mulcair to try to form a government and get support. Now, there have been various statements made. You've got Mr. Mulcair, I think, making expressed offers of cooperation with the Liberal Party, saying that, well, those were rebuffed. And the language from Mr. Trudeau is, to this point, been to the effect of no formal coalition. And those words may be quite important. In a formal coalition, you could have a circumstance where, for example, if the Liberals need the support of the NDP to maintain confidence in the House, mm-hmm. a formal coalition would be something like, well, Mr. Mulcair, you can be the finance minister and I'll be the prime minister and we'll do this all together in cabinet.
Right.
Off we go.
One big happy family.
An informal arrangement could be the Liberals saying, no, we're not doing that. But if you, the NDP, wish to support us in the House, we would appreciate that. And they could seek input on things. Like, for example, they might say, look, you know, will you support this budget? And the NDP might say, sure, we'll support the budget, but only if you include money for, you know, universal childcare or something. And if the Liberals want their support, they might say, fine, we'll include that. So you can have those sort of informal arrangements that wouldn't be inconsistent with what at least Mr. Trudeau is saying at this point. You don't need to have a formal coalition. You can have somebody who's the prime minister that doesn't have a majority or even the most seats in parliament, as long as they can maintain support there, pass a vote of confidence and have their legislation pass. And that's really the test. And if they can keep that up, it doesn't matter whether they have their party has the most seats or not the most seats. The test is going to be whether Mr. Johnson would wish to give them an opportunity to form government, and then can they maintain support? Can they get their legislation passed?
How quickly does this happen after the election?
Well, that's an excellent question. From a constitutional point of view, it's a requirement that the House sit at least once per year. Now, it would be extremely unusual if Mr. Harper said, look, I'm going to try to hang in here for that long without going there. So you would expect it to come to a head within a few weeks.
Wow. Okay. Fascinating times. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and